There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you are not one of them.
Know you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. Qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. This is a special Oulton Park interview podcast number 499, April 30th, 2011. Nasser, welcome to the studio. What do we got here? We got some special interviews for our listeners that you brought back from the UK.
Yes, sir. This interview, first one, is with Luiz Felipe Nasser. And you know, the nation of Brazil has produced three different world champions, which is number two in the list of countries that have produced number of champions. First, of course, being UK. And Brazil, every few years, some mega talent comes. And this kid is very, very good. And he came on my radar when they had this Formula BMW race in the 2008 Brazilian Grand Prix. He was on the podium in one of the races. I said, wow, pretty impressive. And then he went to Europe, first full year of racing. He won the Formula BMW Europe Championship, and his championship points were more than 100 points than the second place driver, who was Daniel Junqueira, who himself is a very good driver. So this is special talent. Very happy to meet him. Met his dad, Sami, and Uncle Amir Nasser also, who runs a racing team in Brazil. They are from Brasilia. So this is some mega talent. His manager is Steve Robertson, who is also a manager to our good friend, Mr. Kimi Raikkonen. So hope people will enjoy this conversation. And then after this interview, we have a chat with his manager, Mr. Robertson. Steve Robertson used to race here in the U.S. He won the Indy Lights Championship, and I remember him from his racing days. So it was very nice talking to them, and hopefully our listeners will enjoy both interviews. And all the best to Felipe and Mr. Robertson. Obrigado.
Okay, folks, I'm here with the next Brazilian mega talent and my long-lost cousin, Felipe Nasser. Felipe, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. I'm very good, very happy about the qualifying, starting on pole. So looking forward for the races, should be very good.
Okay, the first time I heard your name is at the 2008 very exciting Brazilian Grand Prix, and I saw this name on the podium, Formula BMW. I was following because my friend Alexander Rossi was racing there, and I said, who is this Felipe Nasser? Never heard of him. Tell us about that weekend. It was your first motor race, if I understand.
Yes, it was my first proper weekend in a Formula car. It was my first race. I never done any Formula race before, so I finished on the podium on the second race, so I was third, and I was very good feeling from my side and also from those who believed in my talent. So that was the beginning of everything, so it always started there. So
were you surprised that you were able to get on the podium so quickly?
Yes, I was, because I didn't expect it to be quite quick in the beginning, because I've drove that car once, and I didn't have so many mileage in that car, so I was quite surprised to be on the podium, my second ever race, so I was pretty happy in the end.
Okay. I was talking to your friend Lucas Foresti, and he says you've been karting since you were 4 years old. Tell us a little bit about your karting achievements in Brazil.
Yeah, I started in go-kart when with 7 years old, and I went until I turned 16. I was still in Brazil doing go-karts. I won many important champions in Brazil, the most important ones, a few times, and I think go-kart is the basics of everything you learn. I still using some techniques here that I start in go-karting, so it was a long period in karting that I'm sure that was very worth to do it, so that was pretty good. I enjoyed those times, it was very nice.
Okay, 2009, you moved to Formula BMW Europe, and man, what a season you had. 14 podiums from 16 races. What was your expectations before the season started? Realistically, what were you thinking? Because there were some good drivers who were in there, not first, but the second year of Formula BMW.
Yes, that's right. There was more experienced drivers than me in that year, with 2 years, 3 years in that series. So that was my first year in the BMW Europe, so I was just expecting to be in the top five at least, so we went over the expectation. So I mean, during the test I could feel I had a very good team as well, but I could always give my best, and I saw the results in the test were pretty good, so I felt pretty confident for the races. So I proved that in the first round at Barcelona when I got the pole position. I got one win as well, so that was really special for me. And yes, we start everything there, the professional life.
Okay, is Globo TV going crazy about you now that we have the new Senna?
they're not crazy yet, but they start to know about this name, Nasser, so I hope in the future now, like every race we can, they can get more information about me, and I want that also everybody in Brazil gets more information about the series and about my name, because I think now it's time to everybody know this. We can be in the future. Maybe we can be in Formula One. So it should be good if everyone start knowing about this name more. So I will do my best to be in the front there.
Yes, Felipe is on fire. Now I have a question for you. I've been following racing since 1973, okay? You went from Formula BMW Europe to British F3 Formula 3. Was that your decision? Or because a lot of drivers normally go to Formula Renault. Or was a decision made by Mr. Robertson?
Yes, we have the we had the option to do Formula Renault first. But because it was a new car and the teams wasn't sure about the car, if it was going to be a good year or not. So with Steve Robertson, he opted for British F3, you know, on his own team. But yeah, was a learning year, I can say, because we didn't have the quickest car there. So I could manage to finish in front of my teammates. They were second year already in the series, so I could beat them in the track, and we finished fifth overall. And I think it was a very good option to do, because now I know all the tracks, I mean most of the tracks in England and of the championship, so I've learned about the car as well. So it was his own decision, but we had the option to do Renault or GP3 and F3, but we opted for F3 because we could have more mileage in the car and also learn the tracks.
Was the season, first F3 season, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate it, 10 being best? Was it more frustrating, or you knew that it's just a learning experience?
I had the potential, I mean, but it, sometimes our car could have been quicker, and I could get the best of it when it was good, but sometimes we just didn't have the pace in the tracks, and that was a bit frustrating, because we had good drivers in the team, but we could not deliver our speed. During the mid of the season, we changed a few things in the setup of the car, and we started making scoring points in towards the end of the season. And I got my first win in British F3 last year. So I think It was really hard because we had to work so much, but it was worth it because I've learned a lot in this time. So it's good when you have to push yourself even more than let's say normal, but it was a learning, I can say. It was good.
And talking of Steve Robertson, did you approach him to manage your career, or they contacted you?
They contacted me because at that time I was with we had a few options in BMW. Like I started the season with just my own sponsors from Brazil, and then it came Red Bull. They offer us a contract as well. Also from Gravity, I feel very good guys when came to contact me, but we chose Steve because I think they had the best package and they could give me a very good attention, and yes, I think was the best option I did.
Now Red Bull is such a big name, and you know they've just produced their first world champion. What was missing from their package, if you can talk about it? I think you made the right decision because they really push people and put them on a super fast track. So what was the reason there?
I mean, Red Bull, they can do a very good program with the drivers, and they also can be very good. They can deliver all the driver needs. It will be there, but I think the only problem is if you get too many drivers that are supported by Red Bull, then where are they going to be in Formula 1? Because I know they have got two teams, but those drivers that are there in the moment, they're going to still there for a few years, I think. So I don't think you have space for all those drivers to get in F1 in the time they want. So with the Robertsons, they can put in any team. So we have a better option to go there. So when I'm ready, it will be the right move then.
Yeah, and going back to motor racing, you raced at Macau Grand Prix last year, real Monte Carlo type circuit. Do you like street racing, or do you enjoy racing at places like Spa?
Yeah, I like both. I mean, Macau is a very special place, and again, we didn't have the best car there. I just done my best to finish the race, and it's good to learn Macau because this year we're coming back there again with Carly, so I'm looking forward to that. Now we know we have a better package. So, but I also like Spice. They are completely different tracks, but it's another special one, you know. And, I'm sure most of the drivers thinks it's the favorite run. So, I really like Spice as well.
Now the British F3 season started at Monza, three races, you had two wins, one podium. Are we going to see another 14 podiums from 16 races, something like that?
I will try, I'll do my best. For sure it's great to be on the podium all the time, but you know it's difficult as well, but I will do my best.
Okay. Now, very important question. Your girlfriend is the daughter of Nelson Piquet. Has he ever given you any racing advice?
Yes, sure. I've spoken to Nelson a few times, and he knows about what I'm doing, and all the time he asks for news, and when I'm in Brazil there, when I go to Julia's house, I can have a quick chat with him, and he gives some advices because he has been here as well, but it's good to have someone like that looking, and that thinks you're a good driver as well. So
I have the secret to keeping Nelson Piquet happy, and I was a big fan of his. I followed his career when he was in Formula 3 here. The secret to keeping Nelson Piquet happy is don't ever have fish and chips with Greg and Leo Mansell. You know the story there, right?
Nah, I've heard about it. I didn't know the right one, but I heard something about it.
Yeah, when they were teammates at Williams, they did not like each other. But these things happen. I really appreciate your time. Finally, can you give a message to our listeners? We have listeners all over the world, including in Brazil.
I just want to say that everyone keep looking forward to this name that can be in the future. So, and I want to thank everyone that supports me and think. I don't know, really, just just want to thank everyone for their support. Yeah.
Well, we've been reporting on your success since that 2008 formula. I've been telling people, watch out for this guy. What is? Tell them about your website, please.
You can access www.filippinasse.com, and you can have all the news, all the races, pictures, and everything.
And there's a video of also you catching a fly there.
Yeah, that was quite funny. My girlfriend did it, so.
Obrigado, senor.
Felipe, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
Okay, folks, we're in Alton Park with the 1994 Indy Lights champion, Mr. Steve Robertson. Steve, first of all, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks.
Now, your main claim to fame is being manager to some very famous racing drivers, but let's talk about your racing career first. Tell us a little bit about your racing life in the UK. You were in British F3 before you went to USA.
Yeah, I did British F3 for a couple of years over here. You know, I finished third in the championship at the time for my best result here. I won four or five Formula 3 races. The guys who beat me are pretty well known, the likes of Mika Häkkinen and Mika Salo. I think Fittipaldi was fourth in my year, so it was a particularly tough championship. And after that, I decided to go to the US.
How did you find the racing scene compared to the racing scene in the UK?
Very different, actually. When I went over there, I mean, it's obviously you have to respect the ovals. You can't be quite as aggressive in the racing on the ovals as you can on road courses and street circuits. So it was a different mentality, different way of racing. You know, I enjoyed it. You know, the ovals do take some getting used to, and you know, at the end of the day, we've all certainly paid the price a couple of times for big crashes on ovals, but I enjoyed it.
You were Rookie of the Year in Indy Lights, won the championship. What made you got into driver management and not keep on with the motor racing career of your own?
Well, I got to a certain stage in my career where, you know, a certain age that, you know, I got as far as I could get, and I needed a big budget behind me to get into IndyCar after winning the championship in Indy Lights. You know, it didn't happen. You know, started to look at some young drivers, really, and I didn't intentionally start to manage any young drivers, but when I was told about a couple of young, very, very hot, talented drivers coming through, and would I have a look at them? You know, with my father, we decided to take that a step further after seeing, you know, what I felt was some very talented kids, and but without the money, you know. So we sort of, you know, put them in the right direction, guided them, and supported them in their early part of their career to get them through the racing ladders to get to Formula One.
Now, one of those young kids was Jenson Button. When and where did you spot him, and how long did your association last with him?
I wasn't so involved with Jenson. My father was actually involved with him more, with a guy called Harold Heisman. But initially, before my father got involved, he asked me to go and look at him at a place called Pembrey in Wales, you know, when he was doing a test. And I told him exactly what I felt, that, you know, I saw someone who was... Jenson was one of those sort of drivers, very much like Alan Prost, you know. He didn't look so spectacular, but had a very good turn of pace. And everything was very easy, very smooth for him. And from there, he went on to win the Formula 4 Championship in his first year and did well in Formula 3, and the rest is history.
Now, you had another very high-profile but low-key race car driver as your client, Mr. Kimi Raikkonen, and I'm a big Kimi fan. When and where did you see him race first time?
Well, basically, again, he came from the karting scene, and, you know, Kimi wasn't very fortunate, didn't have so much funding behind him, but, you know, the job he was doing in go-karts with a chassis and engine that wasn't the preferred chassis in that particular year. You know, he was winning championships, and so we basically brought him over to give him a test in Formula Ford, and Kimi's very different to Jenson in this way, that he has that ability to, within three or four laps of a new car, new circuit, to be, you know, on the limit and over the limit, and but had that ability to keep everything on the track. And he was very spectacular to watch, and had something that, you know, had a very unique talent, basically.
Okay. Now, the stunt he pulled out, going from 23 motor races to Formula One, Senna, Schumacher did not do that. Were you behind that decision or guidance, and what do you think of that?
Well, I think, yeah, of course, I was behind that again with my father. We worked very closely on this situation. But, you know, again, Kimi's a unique character. You know, he's got a very cool temperament. He didn't get the Iceman tag for no reason. And, you know, I think if you look at the way that he won the championship in Formula Renault, he didn't just win it, you know, he pipped it at the end. This guy was winning 15 lap races by 20 seconds. He was a superstar in the making, clearly. And as soon as he had his first test in Formula One, you know, it took some convincing to persuade, you know, Peter Sauber that this kid who's come from Formula Renault is ready for Formula One. But he really was at a very young age. And after literally 30 laps in his first test of Formula One, he did Sauber's quickest lap ever around Mugello. You know, when a kid comes from Formula Renault and jumps to Formula One and does their quickest lap in 30 laps, clearly Peter Sauber understood that he had something very special there too.
If I may ask you this question, he once, after leaving McLaren, he called Ron Dennis a control freak. And I was talking to Martin Brundle, who also raced for Ron Dennis. Is Ron Dennis a control freak? He says, no, Kimi is wrong. Ron is a super control freak. Tell us a little bit about that, please.
Well, I mean, Ron is known for being, you know, in control of every situation. And one thing you can't do with Ron is argue what he's achieved in this industry. I mean, but, you know, Ron has his own way of doing things. And obviously what he wanted to do was be involved with the driver in many aspects. And obviously, with the driver in Formula One, there's certain things that are expected of them that, you know, they wanted to control every situation, you know, and sometimes that becomes not just in the racing side of things, but also a little bit more personal than that. And you know, so sometimes, obviously, there was a conflict of interest, but it wasn't as much as the press made it out to be.
Okay, now he is going to NASCAR. Is that your suggestion, his own idea, or sponsor-driven?
His own idea, to be honest. Obviously, you know, that's something that he decided he wanted to do. You know, he had some opportunities to go back to Formula One, and I mean, the fact is that Kimi's already achieved his dream of being a Formula One world champion. So now he wanted to look at other opportunities, and you know, it's pretty much well considered that NASCAR is a tough environment, and you know, he wants to see how he goes out there.
Now you have another super talented kid, Felipe Nasr. First of all, do drivers come to you, or do you go to them? What do you think about this kid? This guy is special.
Well, a lot of drivers come to us. You know, we have literally, you know, over the course of the years, hundreds of drivers have approached the management company to try and help them get to Formula One. But we've been very, very particular in our business approach. We only want to get involved with drivers that have the potential not just to get to Formula One, but become Formula One world champions. You know, we watched closely Felipe in his 2009 year in Formula BMW. Obviously, as that was following the Formula One circus, and you know, this kid is, you know, has a lot of similar qualities to Kimi. You know, he has a gifted at super turn of speed, a very cool character. You know, and I think if you look at his race in Monza, you know, the first three races, to race like he did, and at one time he was down in 11th position, to come back and to win that race. And he's a cool, composed character that delivers under pressure, and so far so good.
Okay, I wanted to get your take on a comment from our reigning world champion, Mr. Sebastian Vettel. He keeps telling the press, I don't need a manager, I can get to the track by myself. What does a manager like yourself bring to a driver that a really talented driver should go and get a good manager?
Well, it's there's many things, really, to be honest, but the guidance and experience, I mean, obviously, if you can't knock Sebastian, he's still in Formula One. I mean, he did have Red Bull support him throughout his whole career. I feel that he could get more money from him as a manager than I don't know what money he's on, but I'm sure it's very hard to talk for yourself and say you're the best. But I think as someone who's not a driver, who can sell the driver, I think has a greater opportunity of getting the driver his true value in the market.
Finally, how about a message for our listeners? We have listeners all over the world. Anything you want to say to them, please?
Keep listening, keep watching, because without the supporters, this industry wouldn't survive.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Robertson, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport. A blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.